This is the Utah Politics Podcast. I'm Brian Schott. John Dean is one of the most famous figures in American political history. He was the White House counsel during the Nixon administration and was a central figure in the Watergate affair. In the decades since that scandal, Dean has emerged as one of the sharpest critics of the Republican Party. His latest book is called Authoritarian Nightmare, Trump and His Followers. In the book, he and his co-author, psychologist Bob Altermeyer, dig into Trump's fervent base of supporters to understand why they are all in on the Trump train and why they crave the authoritarian vision of America that Trump offers them. Dean will join me on the podcast in a moment to discuss his book and what Trump's presidency means for American politics going forward. Before we get to that interview, though, I'd like to ask a favor or two. If you like what you hear, please consider leaving a rating and review of the podcast on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. That helps new people find the show. You can also help out by sharing this discussion on social media or subscribing to the podcast wherever you get your podcast. We're just getting started and would really appreciate the help. Now that that's out of the way, I hope you enjoy my interview with John Dean. Joining me today on the podcast is John Dean. He is the co-author of the new book, Authoritarian Nightmare, Trump and His Followers. His co-author is Bob Altermeyer. John, thank you so much for joining the podcast. It is indeed a pleasure.
Thank you, Brian.
Let's talk about the book. You joined with Bob Altermeyer, who is a psychologist, and he's been studying authoritarian personalities. I think this is a very interesting way to approach this topic of the Trump phenomenon, because it's been done to death in so many different ways. We've had White House insiders, but you're trying to take a look at the forces that support and enable Trump. Can you talk about how you came to that idea for this book?
I've actually been working in this area for over a decade. I did a book called Conservatives Without Conscience, where I first looked into the what was then dominated by the religious right and an authoritarianism that had become part of their activities. And that's when I ran into Bob Altmaier's work. So, as I say, it's been over a decade that I have been looking at authoritarian personalities. Little to my surprise, or very much to my surprise, these figures have been studied since really post World War II, when a group of scientists up in Berkeley wanted to understand why so many people were attracted to a Hitler and a Mussolini. You know, how could that happen? Could it happen here? And so that's when this body of science started. It's been now, as I say, over 50 years of it. Bob Altmaier came along, and he is one of many social scientists who have devoted to trying to understand why people are inclined to follow a leader. And it's done now much more with empirical studies. Originally, it was based on Freudian psychology with its own weaknesses, but it's evolved significantly from that era to today, where we now understand the types of people who are attracted to authoritarian personality leaders.
And what did you find in terms of Trump's supporters? Because you think of American government, and we are a democracy and we're a republic, and you know, an authoritarian leader would seem sort of anathema to that. But his followers, his most ardent supporters, seem to actually crave some of the more authoritarian tendencies that he himself leans toward.
I think, Brian, that his authoritarianism is pretty conspicuous. People now, as he has been in office for 3.5 years, are aware of his proclivities to want to be the only guy in charge, and it's either my way or the highway. The fact he has little respect for democratic norms, and they are falling to the wayside in his presidency. So that is pretty self-evident. We actually, in the book, spent a lot of time, because we didn't know Mary Trump was going to write the book she's written about his psychological makeup. And we actually had dug out of the public record many of the things that she wrote about in her book, and actually corroborate her book before she had she'd finished it. And we were looking, she was just trying to understand his narcissism and who he was and why he'd become the person he was. And looking at his father and that tremendous influence the father had on son Donald. But we were looking at it because it also shows the tendency of somebody to become an authoritarian dominating personality. So that established, we also, the core of the book is to look at his followers. Who are these people and why are they attracted to him? And their science shows that there are two people or two groups of people and personalities that fall in this this follower category. One are those who are social dominators themselves, but are willing to go along with a more powerful dominator just for the sake of getting power and domination themselves. Think of Mark Meadows, who was head in the Tea Party, a big deal. He was in the Freedom Caucus, a big deal, and a big dominator. Now he's given up all that to go down and become chief of staff, where he can actually get a little piece of the action and dominate there. So that's one type. The much broader and wider part of the base, not just the enablers, but rather those who are just blindly will follow him, that 30 to 40% out there who approves of everything he does, those are known as right-wing authoritarians. That's a test they're named after. They're broadly called authoritarian followers. More narrowly, the testing that establishes their relationship to authority is the right-wing authoritarian scale. And while this science had existed for a long time, when we did our book, we had decided that the only way we could know for certain if this is what was at play, notwithstanding a half a century of research, was to do a poll in the United States. And we got the Monmouth University Polling Institute, which is as good as they come in the polling business, to run a survey, a national survey for us. We had about 230,000 people from whom we sifted and came up with a sample of about just under 1,990 people, skewed a little bit more towards Republicans because we wanted to understand the base. And they were given, in essence, a series of personality tests along with some polling. And it just blew away my collaborator because it confirmed his life's work and that the theories that we had been laying out were indeed correct in spades.
You mentioned his enablers. As someone who, you know, has been a longtime member of the Republican Party, and now you're a critic of the path that they're on right now, did it surprise you how quickly a lot of members of Congress were able to ditch what they espoused as their long-held beliefs of conservatism and limited government and limits on executive power when Donald Trump came along? Because you see a lot of people who claim to hold the Constitution dear, and they couldn't get in line fast enough behind Trump. And you explained it a little bit because they wanted a piece of the action. But did it surprise you the speed that that happened?
Actually, it did not, because I've been watching the evolution of the Republican Party. I worked for the last authoritarian president, Richard Nixon. Mm-hmm. And post-Nixon, really, it was with there was a decade there where the Republicans were just in the wilderness doing nothing. but with George Bush's return after the Reagan presidency, the authoritarian nature of the Republican Party became pretty clear. And it was no surprise to me when I did a book in 2006, 2007 called Conservatives Without Conscience. And that's where I saw how the leadership was in the control of authoritarians. Now they've got the followers as well. So it is not a surprise to me. And the Republican Party that I knew and my father knew and my one time a lot of my friends knew and are no longer active Republicans, it no longer exists.
It seems to me that the election of Trump was sort of a confluence, perhaps a perfect storm, where you had the changing demographics of the country. And there was a lot of unease about that, especially among white, non-college educated voters who made up the largest part of his base. And you also had a backlash against Barack Obama and a lot of the culture war stuff right now. So it seems like all those came together at the right place in the right time, which enabled Trump to win the White House, albeit by a very narrow margin in the Electoral College, but he still won. Does that sound like a sound theory?
It does. What we found the base to be in our polling the Mammoth Pole was it really, there are two pillars to the base. One is the white male without higher education. The second are the evangelicals and born-agains, which is actually the largest segment of the base, the religious right, if you will. And those are his core supporters. This was not a big surprise because they tend to be either social dominators, which is one type of authoritarian personality, or right-wing authoritarians. High numbers of them do. So their attraction. And what's interesting, Brian, is a guy like Trump, any demagogue, does not go through all this science to understand where to find these people. They just intuitively find their audience, and their audience finds them. And that's what happened with Trump. You know, if he started out in the primaries, people thought he was a joke. But he came out with his message, and it was a message he'd actually tested. People don't know that he was out there giving speeches and getting crowd reaction. Back in 2000, for example, I cite one in the book where he went to a New Hampshire Republican event and was the star at the end of the show. Not that he was active in politics then, but he talked about a fence along the Mexican-American border, and it brought down the crowd. And he's, you know, it registered with him. He said, "Oh, that works." So a lot of this is pre-tested with as he came along and found out, you know, his own beliefs. And at one point he was a Democrat, but he wasn't a very good one. But he found what really registered for him and for his base.
You talk about the support from the evangelical Christian community. That's one of the things that a lot of people have a hard time wrapping their head around. Donald Trump is not a Christian. He does not go to church. You know, he doesn't believe these things. But a lot of his supporters see him as someone who was chosen by God for this role. Does your research show that is, you know, a fervent belief, or is it more of a cynical look at a way of getting a hold of power, seeing Trump as a tool to get to the societal and political means that they would like to see?
This is really where my collaborator had done a lot of work, several decades of study. He and an associate, they had looked at the Christian right and their political philosophies and their beliefs and their personalities. And first they found, in a stack of studies, that there was not a direct relationship. You can't equate Christianity with morality. They just didn't correlate. The fact that these people claimed they were Christian didn't mean that they were going to score high on tests of morality. It just didn't work. But even more to me, most surprising, was they found that these people, notwithstanding their beliefs and the fact that Trump is the antithesis of everything they preach and teach, that they're willing for their own political or power goals or societal goals, they'll put their religion aside. It really isn't. It isn't the bottom line of everything, the be all and end all of what's going to be their life. So they will set these things aside and get on with what they think is more important. This can also be to reinforce their beliefs in some instances, where they don't, the ends justify the means, if you will. For example, there are a lot of them who, the fact that Trump would appoint judges who would reverse Roe v. Wade, well, that was all they needed. And that was enough to justify any kind of unchristian behavior that he wanted to engage in and to forgive and forget.
Yeah, it seems like a very cynical way to approach this. There's another phenomenon that's happening, and as a member of the media, it's something that I am struggling to understand, and maybe you can shed a little light on this. It's the fact that everyone knows that Trump dissembles and flat-out lies sometimes, but when his supporters are shown demonstrable evidence that what the president has said is not true, they will triple down and say, no, the president is right because, you know, your fact checker is biased or your source is biased. I think about over the weekend, the president tweeted out that the Democrats in their convention omitted the phrase "under God" when they did the Pledge of Allegiance. Well, you know, that didn't happen in a couple of committee meetings, but that didn't happen when it was on TV. And there's actual evidence that that didn't happen. But when people pointed that out online, the Trump supporters were saying, no, the president is 100% right. You're lying. And I've really struggled to wrap my head around that phenomenon where they just ignore objective truth because they support the president so much.
A lot of science on this, actually. As I said, there are two broad categories that these personalities fall in. They're social dominators. They can just accept the fact he lies and they don't care. And they will just say, oh, so what? Or, you know, they will buy his argument. Oh, there was no God mentioned in the pledge by the Democrats. Oh, fine. We'll just go with that. They're cynical and dismissive and unthoughtful on this. There are, however, the followers who are not dominators, but rather the right-wing authoritarians, they have a remarkable capacity for compartmentalization. They can be very inconsistent and contradictory. They can be hypocritical, but often they put these things in compartments and silos where they don't actually see the difference. If they believe what he says, so therefore the media is wrong. That was not mentioned. If Trump says it was not mentioned, they'll take his word for it. They will not go to the trouble and don't want to go to the trouble of actually checking. So that, you know, he can get away with this sort of dissembling that has become his norm and standard procedure.
In a discussion with a friend of mine, you know, and all of this stuff that you're talking about is extremely chilling, trying to get into the minds of the Trump supporters. A friend of mine said that he was thankful that Trump is someone who does not have any principles in the way that he approaches his presidency. He doesn't have any principles. And he said, but I'm terrified what happens given that this happened. And it could happen again that we elect another authoritarian figure as the president. If you get someone in there who actually has principles behind what he wants to do, that could be a really, really scary thing for the America as we know it.
Amen. The fact that Trump is incompetent actually gave me some comfort during the first couple of years. I said, watch this. He's most dangerous because he doesn't know what the hell he's doing or why he's doing it. Or he just does whatever he wants to do. And he doesn't really have a good newspaper knowledge of the way the government works. I said, he will learn, though, just by experience of being there and surrounded by people and picking up this, that, and the other thing. He now knows, and he now knows how to go in and push the Food and Drug Administration around, how to cripple the post office, how to rewrite the regulations of the Environmental Protection Agency, and he's doing it. This is where he's letting his instincts play out, and his enablers are delighted to do what he wants to do. This is why he's going to become increasingly dangerous if he becomes a second term president, because there's no check on him. We have seen the flaws in our system. If we have a divided Congress again, he can do anything, because while the House can impeach him, the Senate's not going to remove him. You do have a national senator who has a spine and doesn't mm-hmm. believe that this should be tolerated. But unfortunately, most of his colleagues don't. It looks, you know, right now it looks like Trump cannot keep control of the Senate. But unless they remove the filibuster, all they can get is a simple majority that would give them control. And if the filibuster is removed, then they can control the Senate.
As we record this, it's Monday, the first day of the Republican National Convention. Earlier today, the president was renominated by the party. And in his remarks, the first thing he said as the people were chanting 4 more years, he came out and he said, well, how about 12 more years? Because he feels like he's been cheated out of his first term because of impeachment and the investigations. A lot of people laugh that off. To me, there's got to be at least a glimmer of truth in there, because I think one thing that we've learned in the 3.5 years of the Trump presidency is, you know, he says things and he's not joking. Everyone says he's joking, but the president does not have a terribly good sense of humor. I don't think he knows how to tell a joke. So does talk like that scare you as you look at, you know, his supporters who love authoritarianism or are drawn to him because he's an authoritarian? Does it scare you when he starts talking like that? Because maybe 30% or 35% of the country would be willing to go along.
That's why I did this book, so people can wake up and say what is going on and understand that basically this 35, 40% that are authoritarian followers are going to remain there and they're going to be with him the whole way. They are very difficult to change their mind. A few on the fringe can be changed. They don't like being seen as prejudiced the way they are. Trump, in fact, has brought together the most prejudiced coalition in modern American history, and they will unleash him to do what he wants. 12 years, no problem. You know, we did some in the polling we did about what would happen if he refused to leave if he lost. Depending on how you slice it, it's between 24 and 29% of his base felt he should be immune to the strictures of the Constitution. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people when you translate it into voters. Another 18 to 19% had no opinion. That's getting up close to, it could be a majority of his the Republicans who would give him their blessing if he wanted to stay and violate the rules of the Constitution. That is spooky. And that's why, as I say, we wrote this book. The only way to deal with it effectively is a tsunami that removes him.
The book is Authoritarian Nightmare. Trump and his followers, John Dean and his co-author, Bob Altermeyer, are behind it. John, thank you so much for your time. It has been an absolute pleasure and honor for me.
Thanks, Brian.